Yossi, can I get you to talk about politics at all? What's happening? What happened? The last time we talked was the day before, not the Lebanon War, but the day before we went into Gaza, maybe. I mean, you could actually look on our site and listen to what you said, lo those many months ago, and whatever you say now, you can look on the site next year and see what you said, if you want to.
Well, there's really not much to add. We won the war and it's all over, isn't it?
Okay.
Now we can go
Right.
home. Well, this is, to my mind, the most difficult time in the history of Israel. That's a big statement. And we've obviously known critical times before, but we've never had a situation that I can think of where we faced, on the one hand, such a convergence of existential threats, and on the other hand, such a total paucity of competent leadership, minimally competent. I feel today that Israel is a kind, that we're all kind of anarchists in a sense, because we've all gotten used to living without a government. And I don't feel that there's anyone in charge. I don't feel that I have a defense minister. I don't feel that I have a prime minister. My son is going off to the army next year, and God knows where he's going and to who's in charge. And that's something that we've never felt before, not to this extent. If one leader didn't work out, there was always someone else waiting in the wings. Now there's a total collapse of trustworthy leaders in the most minimal sense of the word. So that combination is terrifying. The threat of a nuclear Iran and the fact that it looks like this is the government that's going to have to decide whether we attack Iran and then risk a missile war on our cities, or alternatively, we don't attack Iran and allow a genocidal regime to go nuclear. That decision is going to be made by a group of corrupt incompetents is unthinkable. It's unthinkable to me.
We talked a minute ago about the degree to which people here are beginning to understand the depth of the antipathy towards us by the Arab world, Palestinians, the Arabs, the Muslims.
Well, I think if you go back to the Oslo years, the question for most Israelis was, at what point did you begin to realize that they were taking us for a ride? At what point did you begin to realize that this was a one-way process of reconciliation, and that the peace of the brave that Arafat spoke about was real, in English, was really jihad in Arabic? So we all have our trajectories, those of us who initially supported Oslo. We all have the moments when we remember, when a little light went on, said, maybe this isn't what I think. Maybe the right, which I don't want to be tainted by those guys. I don't want to be put in their camp, but maybe not everything they're saying is crazy, at least about the peace process. And that terrifying gradual realization that just as the left had been devastatingly accurate about what the occupation would mean for Israel's soul, the right had been no less devastatingly accurate about what this false peace process meant for Israel's body. And realizing that we were caught in this trap between devastation of the soul and devastation of the body.
Do you perceive a process through which we may transcend this or bypass or exit?
I was a lot more confident and, in retrospect, glib when Sharon came up with his centrist approach, which was unilateral withdrawal. And I supported that passionately. And the reason I supported it is because it seemed to be a way out of this dead end in which we woke up one morning and realized that both the left and the right were wrong. And each was partially right. Each was right about where the other one was wrong. The left understood where the right's annexationist policies would lead us, and the right understood where the left's negotiations with Arafat would lead us. But neither left nor right was able to offer us a workable way forward. So Sharon came along brilliantly and said, okay, we can occupy. That became clear already in the First Intifada. We can't make peace. That became clear in the Second Intifada. If you can't occupy and you can't make peace, what's your alternative? You unilaterally determine a border. You don't wait for a non-existent partner. You minimize the occupation as much as possible and cut your losses and withdraw. Beautiful idea. And conceptually, it was the synthesis of the insights of left and right, the insights of no occupation, no false peace. The problem is that that doesn't work either, because you can build a fence against suicide bombers, but you can't build a fence against missiles. And what happened in the last year, year and a half, is that we moved from the era of suicide bombings into the era of terror by missile. And there was a cartoon that appeared during the Lebanon War in one of the Palestinian papers that showed a Katyusha crashing through the security barrier that we're building. And that was exactly right. So what we now know, as a result of having withdrawn from Lebanon and gotten Katyushas, having withdrawn from Gaza and gotten Qassams, is that were we to repeat that policy in the West Bank, we will get Katyushas, Qassams, a combination of the two, on Greater Tel Aviv and Greater Jerusalem. So we can't do that either. So we now realize we can't occupy, we can't make peace, and we also can't withdraw. That's where we're at now. And that accounts, in addition to the collapse of an ethical and credible Israeli leadership, that accounts for the profound sense of trauma, I don't want to use the word despair, but close to it, that I think the Israeli public feels today.
Do you have any other inspiring thoughts for the immediate or not too distant future?
I think that this is a temporary situation that we're in. And I think that within the next year to two, we are going to find ourselves in a very bitter confrontation with Iran, Hezbollah, Hamas, with that whole front. It's unavoidable. We are the front line of the jihadist war, and we know what the jihadists intend for us, and we will not allow them to go nuclear. I don't even believe that this government will allow them to go nuclear. So one way or another, either the Americans will attack Iran or we'll attack Iran. We will not allow Iran to go nuclear. Another war is inevitable. The silver lining in that is what we saw this summer in the war with Hezbollah, which is that for the first time, several Arab governments, Jordan, Egypt, and even Saudi Arabia, blamed Hezbollah and in effect accused fellow Arabs of aggression against Israel. That's never happened, to the best of my knowledge, in the history of this conflict. There was a fantastic editorial that appeared in an English language paper in Kuwait called Arab News, which noted that Israel's war against Hamas in Gaza and Israel's war against Hezbollah were both necessary because Arab moderates had forfeited the war on terror, and that Israel was doing the Arab world a great favor. Now, can you imagine that? I had to read that twice to be sure that I was reading correctly. And that's something that I think is going to become more and more pronounced. In this morning's Maariv, I think it was this morning, the banner headline is Sunni, there's a new quartet, so-called quartet, of Sunni Arab nations. The Gulf states forming one group, Egypt, Jordan, and Saudi Arabia are tacitly siding with Israel to try to stop Iran from going nuclear. There was a report the other day in Haaretz that the Gulf states have quite several of the Gulf states have quietly sent the word that they will allow Israel to use their airspace if we decide to attack Iran. So in the old days, in the 90s, we used to speak about a new Middle East emerging through negotiations and territorial concessions in exchange for peace, a new Middle East emerging benignly. Maybe we're now going to see a new Middle East emerging through probably the only way it can emerge in the Middle East, and that's through violence.
Thank you, Yossi, although I haven't particularly enjoyed the last part of this conversation, but it's always nice to have some conversation with you.
You've been listening to IsraelScene.com. I'm Steve, and thank you, Yoram, for that wonderful interview with Yossi Klein Halevi. And we're going to go out with Hatikva. How appropriate. Hope. Shavua Tov. Have a great week, everybody. And just remember, if you are interested in any of the wonderful music that we have on our podcasts, you can go to www.cdisrael.com. That's cdisrael.com. And on the website there, Yoram has an eclectic group of wonderful music from Israeli artists, and it's available to everyone out there. So take advantage of it. And if you have any comments, anything you'd like to share with us, please write to us at info@israelscene.com. Go to our blogs, Yoram's blog and my personal blog on the website. And please give us your comments, your feedbacks. They're all appreciated, pros and cons, and those who want to praise us. We're always open to praise. And from Israel and Jerusalem day that has passed, just recently passed, I wish you all a Shavua Tov, a great week, and we'll be with you again real soon. Thank you.